what have you found works best when, I guess, to do when entering a behavior with an autistic child and then to end the behavior?
That's a good question. Limiting verbal interaction as much as possible is huge. As much as you can limit verbal interaction, because it's very, very overwhelming. Depending on the child, you can write things down. We've had kids in the past who, it's been really helpful when it comes down to that, we'll write down, like, say for instance their stress is about the upcoming like hour or 2 hours, so we'll write down like the next three things that are going to happen, and we'll show that to the student. Now it really depends on the child, because for some of them they feel that that's really condescending, and so it can escalate behaviors. So you just have to kind of know the kid, whether or not their writing is going to be helpful or not. So decreasing verbal is big. Writing is a potential option. If you can focus on something else, that can be very helpful. Like sometimes different fidgets or things like that can be really effective. You don't want to use things that you would use as rewards as coping strategies. Like, you have to split those and be very specific about that. So like, I wouldn't have a student use a computer game as a de-escalation strategy, because then it would be encouraging them to repeat that behavior. It shows them that that is effective in getting a reward as opposed to a coping strategy. So I guess those are a few things.
And then, so like, when they're in like the heat of their worst behaviors, mm-hmm. what's your personal take on like just let them be, or like when do you?
So again, it really depends on the kid. I've had kids who, they really appreciate when you're very reassuring and comforting. So repetition of, we'll get through this, it's okay, this is just a moment in time. Those sorts of comments can be helpful for some kids. For other kids, they can perseverate more on what they're focused on if you try to be reassuring. So for some kids, you need to just kind of give them the space, like make sure that they're in a safe space. So I think step one, if they're in the middle of a behavior, is checking out your environment and making sure that there's nothing that they can hurt themselves or somebody else with. And then, this is a really like disjointed, like my thought process, but I think the environment's big. I think for some kids, it's step back and let them have their meltdown. Don't respond at all. For some kids, avoiding making eye contact or staring at them could increase a behavior, so mm-hmm. avoiding that could be helpful. And then for other kids, it might be proximity, like actually being close and being with them and reassuring. So it's very much an individual basis from what I've seen.
I mean, and I can identify with that, like, thinking back to, like, how you would treat a student versus your own child, too.
Yeah.
Is a huge...
Yeah. And age of the child matters a lot.
Definitely.
Because when I was in the middle school, there would be kids who, I would literally hug them, and you could just feel some of the tension decrease, like, in having that contact. But again, that's so specific, because with autism, typically, like, person-to-person contact is not helpful.
Right.
But with that student at that age, it happened to work really, really well for her. But now she's in high school, I would not even consider that strategy.
That would be inappropriate for this setting.
Exactly.
But again, thinking like to elementary age, like with Jazzy, mm-hmm. that would be something that I mean, I know sometimes that that's what he needs is that close, very strong.
The pressure can be really helpful too.
Right.
I've seen weighted blankets be really, really effective.
Mm-hmm.
I know Temple Grandin invented her like squeeze machine, which I think is a really interesting concept as far as like adding pressure without human contact.
Mm-hmm.
But because I've worked with older students, that hasn't really been a preference. I've been in schools where those have been available, but students haven't really chosen those, especially in the middle of a meltdown. I haven't really seen them opt for that.
Did you ever work at the elementary level?
No, I did some practicums at the elementary level, and I worked in a daycare when I was in college, and there were some students who had like just been identified
mm-hmm.
as being on the spectrum when I was there. So, but I haven't worked like extensively at the elementary level.
Because it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they say that, but it's, I guess they've learned some of their coping strategies by the time we get them mm-hmm. here.
Yeah, and I think verbal is big, because at an elementary level, especially for a student with autism, verbal can be a big challenge. Like, voicing mm-hmm. what they're actually experiencing is really hard, but their communication skills improve a lot by the time they get to high school, especially with the direct instruction that they get at the elementary and middle school level.
Right. And I think schedule plays a big part in it, too.
Yeah, being very, very specific about scheduling. Anytime you can go over a schedule in advance, that can mm-hmm. be really helpful. One thing that I worry about, and this is probably just me, but is the balance between...
Good afternoon, Greyhounds. The following is scheduled for March 19th. Data call will be after
the balance between...
That's all for today. Have a great day.
Yeah, that's my turn.
I think you were discussing the balance between...
Oh, right. Between flexibility, like working on being flexible, and establishing a routine, because routine is huge with autism, but what you don't want, or what I worry about for our students, is that if we establish routines so much that anytime there's a wrench thrown into that routine, that it can be chaos, because they don't understand how to manage that change. And mm-hmm. so building up those routines, but also looking for ways to practice the need for flexibility, I think would be really important. And recognizing that if there is a break in routine, it's not a failure on the parent's part, or even necessarily the teacher's part, that it's, that's how life is. Like, that's what it is. And so helping them navigate what that change looks like, or how to respond to a change in routine.
And I think that's probably why some of people that are at the district level seem more suited for an elementary
mm-hmm.
setting, is because those behaviors manifest more at the elementary setting when you don't have all of the strategies in place yet.
Yeah.
And by the time you get here, you've had years of practicing them.
Yeah.
And now it's just getting them fine-tuned.
Right. Yeah, what's hard, though, is to find strategies that apply to all situations. Because there's only so much that you can anticipate ahead of time. And so... I don't know, like, you can teach about, okay, so there's going to be a convocation this Friday. Like, that's going to be a change, a break in schedule. It's not going to look the same as other days. How are we going to prepare for that? Like, what do you need when you come in that morning? Talking through that. But then if there's a fire drill, or, you know, there might be, like, smoke in the kitchen and there's fire that you can't predict, like, I don't know, preparing for those moments can be tough if you don't even know to anticipate them.
Right. I think, though, like, I know personally when with things at home with Jazzy and when things come up here, my go-to is I'm hoping for the best.
Right.
The best choices to be made on all, the, you know, all staff parts. And then, and I'm hoping that for the student as well, but I'm expecting and preparing for the worst.
Yeah. And I love, there was a quote that we went over in a training, that was specifically for like managing crises. But they said you need to run to the scene, but walk through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I really liked that because it just shows how important it is that, you know, you get there quickly and you do everything that you possibly can, but the second you get there, your mindset needs to be on calm.
Right.
And it needs to be on, how do I make sure that I don't personally escalate the situation, which can be a big challenge, especially when emotions are involved. Like, there's kids that I've known for years, and it can be more difficult to manage my emotional response in those situations. And I can't even imagine what it's like for a parent to manage that emotional response when it's their own child dealing with that. That would be really hard.
That calmness contagious mentality can can make or break a behavior management situation.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I completely agree. And I've seen situations where, like, it's almost palpable, like, the difference when you see a staff member who is calm handling something, the difference in the time that it takes to decrease that level of anxiety and to de-escalate. It's kind of amazing when you can actually see that difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen staff who have been very calm, and I've seen staff who can get very upset themselves and can kind of panic. And it really is that calm is contagious. Like, if you're calm, then the student is more likely to be able to calm down than if you're amping it up. And I know a lot of people struggle with, well, I want them to know that this isn't okay. But I think in 99% of cases, the kid knows it's not okay. They're not doing it because they think it's acceptable or okay. They're doing it because they don't have any other strategies or skills to handle the frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And Ross Green is a psychologist who talks a lot about that kids do well
right.
if they can, and if they can't, then you end up with behavior concerns. And with autism, there's a lot of challenges that they face with communication and things like that, and self-regulation, that it makes sense that we see these behaviors, because it's not like it was for me when I was a kid and I naturally learned those things. For some kids, they just need that direct instruction on how to handle that stuff.
So I should get you a giant glass of blue Kool-Aid and some cookies. Hey, I've noticed this about you. What's up?
Yes.
Did
very, very effective.
Did you notice
Kool-Aid?
The blue Kool-Aid never went down? The kid kept drinking it, and it never went down.
Yeah, it was an endless supply of Kool-Aid. I'm kind of curious how they managed to make that happen.
Well, I was just thinking how many edits went into this interview.
Yeah.